You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Over 60 ancestral belongings have been returned to Shilkoteen territory in the central interior of British Columbia through a partnership between the Shilkoteen National Government and the Museum of Vancouver. A delegation of elders, youth, children, women's council members, and former Shilkoteen leaders traveled to Vancouver to collect the items and bring them home. Sharon Fortney, the senior curator of Indigenous collections at the Museum of Vancouver, says that this particular round of repatriation is the culmination of a long process.
Well, that grew out of a previous repatriation we did with one of six of the nations there. The other repatriation had been undertaken like 11 years previously, and it was actually ancestral remains to one specific community. At the time that work was done, they weren't ready to complete that repatriation. So we kept reaching out to them, and eventually they came to a place where they were ready to move forward. And while they were visiting us with elders and other knowledge holders from their community, we have like a big research table in our storage area, and the shelving directly behind it actually held several Shilkoteen baskets. So community members were really like, they were looking at them, and they actually expressed to us that they didn't have any of those baskets back in their own community. Like maybe they'd been gifted four back by the government for some work they did, but generally they were absent from their communities.
Fortney explains that the repatriated items, including 29 coiled root baskets, 29 stone artifacts, a birch bark knife sheath embroidered with dyed porcupine quill, and one pair of snowshoes made from rawhide, sinew, and wood, are much more than simply objects or artifacts to the Shilkoteen people.
There's a lot of knowledge wrapped up in sort of material belongings, and it's not, you know, we might look at it as just a functional object, but actually there's a lot of knowledge around how people use their land, where they went. When you're harvesting roots, you know, they might not be available everywhere. Some of the decorative materials, it might tell us something about climate change and resource management in those territories. It's also for the young people, it's a source of community pride. I think it's just really awakened a lot of questions in them about some of this missing knowledge that's in their community and how they're going to maybe go about bringing it back into practice, which I think is the, you know, part of healing and recovery. So it's really a beautiful thing.
The repatriation of artifacts is a key part of the Museum of Vancouver's mission and ongoing efforts towards reconciliation, representing a shift in philosophy for the Museum of Vancouver and other museums with collections of Indigenous artifacts.
The Museum of Vancouver is a nonprofit, and our role is to care for the City of Vancouver's collection. So the collection is close to 80,000 items, and about a third of them are Indigenous belongings, not just from our province, but from around the world. So we have collections from the South Pacific, Africa, South America, other parts of Canada and the U.S. So we have a collections policy that tells us our responsibility to the city for caring for their collection, and repatriation is part of that policy. We are still collecting, but we are the Museum of Vancouver. So in the past, the museum was started in the 1890s, and it was started by settlers who came from colonies all over the world. And that's why the collection is really diverse. And so you can't collect forever. You run out of space, you know. So it's really about what are the priorities of the Museum of Vancouver today. One of them is like redress and decolonization. So we are very open to repatriation requests from Indigenous communities. But we're also like reshaping the collection through our contemporary collecting. So most museums, they don't have very much money to do that work. But, you know, we get a little bit each year, and we try now, if we're going to collect Indigenous made objects, we're looking at things that sort of are made by contemporary people, maybe artists, practicing artists that are made for sale or document some sort of an activity that they want to document. And so we're looking more towards host nation communities, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh, and also Indigenous artists whose stories connect them to Vancouver. So we like have, for example, a few hundred pieces in our Plains collection, but what does that tell us about life in Vancouver? It doesn't tell us anything, right? So we are very open to repatriation requests from, especially from communities outside of the city.
The Shilkoteen National Government and the Museum of Vancouver will continue the partnership that led to the repatriation of over 60 items, with the development of a new collaborative exhibit at the Museum of Vancouver to showcase the repatriation as an example of successful collaboration surrounding the repatriation of ancestral belongings.
They wanted to continue their relationship with us. And one of the plans they have for their belongings that they've repatriated is to share them amongst the different communities. And also they want to encourage other museums, I think, to do repatriation. They also want their community members to be aware of what repatriation is. So they wanted to do an exhibition with us. So it'll be under the title, The Work of Repair. So one component of that exhibition will be just about the celebration of the Shilkoteen repatriation. And they filmed and photographed the baskets. They're still discussing with their representatives what they want to see actually in the exhibition, but there will be probably a film about their repatriation journey with the Museum of Vancouver. And then these beautiful photographs of the baskets touching the ground where they were, you know, made and came from. Like, that was a really important thing they wanted to do with them. And then they're applying for funds to eventually travel that to little museums and in surrounding communities where it can be shared widely in the Shilkoteen area.
Many of the items returned to Shilkoteen custody can now be viewed at the Shilkoteen National Government DAZICO office in Williams Lake. And celebrating Shilkoteen repatriation will be part of an exhibition entitled The Work of Repair, Redress and Repatriation at MOV, which is scheduled to open in the spring of 2025 at the Museum of Vancouver. Jesse Wensloff, CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, reporting. This piece is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and is made available for broadcast by media outlets across the country at frequencynews.ca.
Hey, 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 hey
exhibition at the Bill Reid Gallery of Northwest Coast Art in Vancouver is celebrating the work of a master Haida artist and his outstanding contributions to his family, his community, and his culture. This is the featured artist, Kiliata Christian White.
Many of these pieces are inspired from stories that keep us tied to the lands and waters of our Haida Gwaii. And you can see the different techniques I've employed in my sculptures. It also shows the passing on of the knowledge and the culture to the next generation.
The retrospective exhibition, Kiliata Christian White, Master Haida Artist, spans the career of the renowned carver and multidisciplinary artist, ranging from stunningly detailed stone argillite sculptures and silver jewelry to cedar bentwood boxes and ceremonial masks.
It's a great feeling to be here in the Bill Reid Gallery and see all these pieces in the exhibition together. And, it kind of shows the generations and the different decades, really, of my carving career, my art career. And also to kind of educate people that come here to see, I think they could view our community, our Haida community from Haida Gwaii, through a lens here and be able to see, just like our different movements that we've started through the years, the revival of our arts and culture, our ceremonies, our connection with the ancestors. Each one of the parts of the exhibit show that, really, and the value that we place upon our work, that we have created over the years.
The unifying theme running through the entire exhibition is one of family and community, as the exhibit tells the story of Kiliata Christian White's unwavering commitment to uplifting members of his family and community through apprenticeships, the revival and renewal of traditional artistic and cultural practices, and the transformation of his own craft from a commercial endeavor to make ends meet into the center of an artistic community that preserves, shares, and pushes Haida art into the future.
My name is Amelia Ray. I am the assistant curator here at the Bill Reid Gallery and the co-curator of this exhibition. This was really exciting and felt very natural. I grew up really closely with Christian's daughter. She's my best friend. And I grew up as a lead dancer in his dance group and spent a lot of time at his longhouse. So it kind of felt really right that we would put this on for him, and also like a lot of pressure because him and his family have just done so much for our community. So it felt really, it was a lot of pressure to be like, how can we honor him in the magnitude that he deserves? That was so important to us because that's how we know him. And, all of the collectors and people who know his work know him as an argillite carver and somebody who's selling in galleries, but to Haida Gwaii, he's the person who does so much for our community and for the preservation of our Haida culture. And so it felt really important that we honor that and reflect that in this exhibition, because he's, you think of Christian White and he's so much more than just Christian White. He's his family and his dedication to our people. And he said something at one of his potlatches in 2022 that he's doing this out of the love for his people. And I think that we tried to reflect that the best way that we could.
While Kiliata Christian White has been sharing his culture with the world by creating and selling sculptures and other art since he was a youth, he eventually realized that through his art, he could build and strengthen his community in Haida Gwaii, preserving and revitalizing his people's traditional culture and heritage.
But midway through my career, I realized that we don't have to sell everything. We could keep what we want. We could keep things for our own use and our own culture. And so I found a way to do it. Something that wasn't really even heard of. We were encouraged, back in the day, we were just encouraged to sell everything, to burn everything, to move on. But in a way, it was our culture that kind of saved us and saved my family. We had nothing left. There was no fishing industry left. Logging was just devastating our islands. And so those weren't directions I wanted to go in. And so I was drawn to the arts. And now I encourage visitors to come to our islands. And what I encourage them to do is to take a picture, to go for a walk, to buy a piece of art, to support a living artist. So that's what I do. And I try to educate them.
This community-centric revitalization, helped by Kiliata Christian White's apprentices, has included a resurgence in the creation of one of the Haida's most iconic works.
Right now it's raising as many totem poles as we can on Haida Gwaii. There's a revival of that also. In 2017, I carved carved a totem pole. I had 8 apprentices, 4 female, 4 male. And then we carved a totem pole. It was standing as a tree December 1st or so. And then by June, it was standing as a totem pole. And I believe every one of those students really learned and gained a lot from that experience, as I did. And then I've seen a pole being raised in Haina, which is another ancient village. Another one was down in Kai'au or whatever, down in Windy Bay. So there's a revival of bringing totem poles back out onto the land, into the ancient village sites again. And so, you know, there was a big gap of 125 years of no totem poles being carved, and now it's been revived. And so there could be even a full-time carving in my community where I could have many apprentices, and I don't even have to do it all too. We have other master carvers, journeymen that can carry it about. And so I think we've started that revival, really.
Beyond creating new works and preserving traditional techniques and methods, Kiliata Christian White's teachings build and strengthen community and provide his apprentices with structure, purpose, and sometimes a lifeline.
Like, I've probably kept a few people out of prison. So, or, you know, from going into that line, you know, of, you know, just getting in trouble. And so I've been able to deter them from that lifestyle. But, you know, of course, it's up to them, too. So it's not a total foolproof, but it gives them an alternative. And, you know, there's some, you know, that have difficulties. You know, they might have a mild disability, or they could have other troubles in their lives. They need alternative type of education. Sometimes the school model is not the only model. You know, sometimes, you know, it's a more holistic type of model that they need. And then they can move back, you know, to the school system. Sometimes they got to get that something out of their system. And they got to feel proud about themselves. And, you know, it's worked well for me. And, you know, some of them will move off to other specialties or other activities, other careers. But that's fine. They'll still have those tools, that knowledge behind them, and then that pride in the culture.
Kiliata Christian White's legacy is further cemented by the works of his apprentices, who have taken his traditional teachings and shaped a bold new future for Haida art.
Haida art is going in many directions. We have some artists working in Haida manga. We have artists that are working in filmmaking, graphic design, working in multi-graphic type of materials, you know, children's books, you know, incorporating the Haida language. And you also have a lot of people involved with the textiles. For the most part, I try to focus on the traditional parts first, and then once they're done with me, they could go any direction they want to go. And of course, you know, there's jewelry, there's weaving, you know, so there's many different directions we can go.
Kiliata Christian White, Master Haida Artist, runs until February 2026 at the Bill Reid Gallery of Northwest Coast Art in Vancouver. For CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wentzloff. This report is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and is available online with other stories from across the country at frequencynews.ca.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
guys can walk through the island here, talk to your friends.
Hello, friends. Hello, neighbors.
During a workshop at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia, participants walk through the history of colonization in what is now Canada, providing an experiential learning opportunity for all involved.
Here today is the northern part of what we now know as North America, before the arrival of the Europeans. By standing on these blankets, you represent the indigenous people, the people who have been here since time immemorial. Long before the arrival of the Europeans, this land was our home to millions of First Nations people, and Inuit have been living here.
Telling history through an Indigenous perspective, the Kairos Blanket Exercise invites participants to witness, experience, and immerse themselves in the devastating impacts of European colonization on the original inhabitants of this continent.
You represent the First Nations, which were divided when the border between the United States and British Dominion of Canada was created. This border divides communities and cuts us off from each other. You will be moved to separate blankets to represent the creation of this border. If you are part of the same family or community, it doesn't matter. Move now. So, with people close to one another, yeah.
The event was facilitated by Moontide Reconciliation, with Lana Arnold taking the lead.
I'm from Upper Nicola Band in Merritt. From my dad's side, I'm from Saskatchewan Standing Buffalo Reserve. The blanket exercise goes over 500 years of history from the Indigenous eyes. We go over MMIWG, residential school, 60 Scoop, and other colonial violence that has happened to our people. And it's from an Indigenous view, so everybody in the room gets to experience from an Indigenous lens and to start to feel like what we're feeling. I think it's really important for people to feel kind of what we experience so they can have a better understanding of where we come from. And that's when I notice they start seeing a change, like they realize, like, now it all makes sense.
Arnold says that beyond providing an opportunity for non-Indigenous participants to engage with the history of colonialism and participate in a small act of reconciliation, delivering the workshops has made a tremendous positive change in her own life.
About a year ago, when my mom, she was a short staff member, so she just threw me in there and said, "You're going to be playing the European, and she's going to be the narrator," and she told me, and I didn't realize. Like, I wasn't even in that part of my healing journey yet, and I realized, I was like, well, this is more than what I thought it was. I didn't know what to expect when you hear blanket exercise, so I was also shocked. I was like, oh, this is what we're doing. So when I started doing the workshop myself, I also started learning about my own culture and everything, and the truth. I started realizing the things I've gone through and with trauma and everything. It made me realize where I came from, and I forgave my family and everything that I've experienced.
The workshop is extremely impactful, and participants emerge with a revamped understanding of and empathy for Indigenous people.
Yeah, I've had people, a lot of emotions come out of it, like people cry, or you could tell they just realize like what we're going through. And for me, I don't want people to feel like kind of like pity or sorry. Like, I want people to just have respect for Indigenous people and treat us like humans and acknowledge us. Yeah.
It's a small step on the path to reconciliation, but the blanket exercise presents a unique opportunity to move forward on the long journey.
For me, I hope people take away we're still here, we're resilient, and just to acknowledge us, to enjoy our culture and not look too much in the past. Like, it's important to look in our past, but we want to move forward and in a good way.
Please step off the blanket and join your ancestors in the circle. After these acts of resistance and fearing for your lives, many of you changed your names and moved away. So sometimes as far as the United States. Some of you have moved here, First Nations families, and joined these communities through adoption processes. Some of you hid or denied your Indigenous heritage altogether. These were the dark times for the Métis. There was a time of persecution and extreme poverty.
From Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia, I'm Jesse Wensloff for CJSF 90.1 FM. This story is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and is available online with stories from across the country at frequencynews.ca.